At the end of July, the FBI announced it had completed the largest sex trafficking sweep in our nation's history, called Operation Cross Country 7. More than 105 children were rescued, and more than 150 pimps and others were arrested. And surprisingly, Wisconsin ranked high during the sting by having the third highest concentration of victims rescued. 10 kids were found to be locked into sex trafficking right here in the Badger State. And my guests today will tell you that's likely just a fraction of a bigger problem. This hour, we're talking about sex trafficking in our state and our region on the West Side. Good Monday morning to you. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'm joined by three guests from the realms of advocacy and law enforcement. Then coming up after the break, we'll hear a Q&A that our news intern and Westside producer Chia Vang has put together with Jennifer Price. She's a special agent with the Department of Criminal Investigation who specializes in sex trafficking cases. And listeners, before I forget, we'd like to hear from you too. What do you know about sex trafficking? And would you be surprised to hear that it's happening in your area? Give us a call with your questions and your comments. The number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again, 1-800-228-5615. You can also post a question or a comment on our Westside Facebook page, and we'll do our best to get it on during the hour. But first, we're going to start off with a victim's perspective. And for that, I'd like to welcome to the program Cheryl Voiles. Cheryl, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. I guess my question is, first off, how, and please tell us your story.
Okay, my story, I was involved in a child prostitution ring. And before I even began school, I was already taught how to be a sex object and service men on a regular basis.
And how? Like, how did that happen? Where? That seems like a pretty large line to cross or a thing to fall into. What happened?
I lived in an area that organized crime was pretty strong. I don't know how the connection came, but the gentleman or the stable master started coming to the house, and he would talk with me. After a few times, he began to take me places, and then I was introduced into the warehouse life where they kept the children and would use them at the times that they wanted to.
And you said stable master.
Yes.
That is a... That's something that's a unique term to be using when you're talking about humans. Was this in Wisconsin at the time or no?
No.
Okay.
It was in the Midwest, but not in Wisconsin.
All right. But still, in the Midwest, that kind of thing seems very foreign. So how many years? And first of all, what age were you at? You mentioned before school that narrows it down to like 4 years old, 5 years old?
My first assault was approximately I was four. Before I was in school, I had already been what I describe as broken. I had been trained, groomed, patterned on this lifestyle, what they wanted, what was expected, what happened if you didn't do what they wanted, and that it was life and death.
And this is in the Midwest. How many? I mean, you were among others in a warehouse, locked in a warehouse.
Yes, I was one of the children. There were many children that passed through the warehouse. There were several children they had within the community that they groomed for long term and high class, high paying clientele, which is part of the reason that helped my survival rate was they were invested in keeping me on a longer term. Mm-hmm. But then my abuse also then went on for years.
How many years were you involved with this?
The high majority or the high volume was elementary and halfway through middle school, and then it began to taper off.
Now, you mentioned that you were groomed or broken. That looking through some of the website, some of the information on Fierce Freedom, which we'll get to in just a bit, and other advocacy websites, they have a lot of terminology there. What does that mean, being groomed?
Well, groomed and broken goes together. Groomed is teaching the child or the victim the expected behavior, that you're supposed to please the client, that you're supposed to do what you're told. Broken is how much it takes to get you to be obedient.
Obedient. So what does that involve, if you don't mind me asking?
Beatings, torture, rape.
And broken, so you try, like, the idea is to separate you from what you were, separate you from what you know and who you know and everything like that?
They get you to a point that you'll do anything to stay alive.
Wow. And obviously you were abused. What kind of infrastructure was there? I mean, you mentioned a warehouse. You mentioned organized crime. This wasn't just a one pimp kind of a thing.
No, this was an organization that spanned probably two decades. I mean, they were organized. They would bring children in from other areas. They would move them around. If a child got used up where they weren't effective or they couldn't bring money in, they would get rid of them, which means they could kill them or they could sell them. But these children that got moved around in these warehouse settings had a very limited lifespan.
Hmm. I'd like to introduce now our second guest this hour, Jenny Almquist. She's a victim advocate for people involved in sex trafficking who founded I'm not sure she founded, but I know she's founded this chapter of Fierce Freedom. It's based in the Twin Cities. Jenny Almquist, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Jenny, how typical is this story that Cheryl is telling? I mean, it seems like it's from something halfway around the world, but yet it's happening right here. I mean, how typical is that?
Well, we don't know for sure because we in Wisconsin really aren't counting. So it's really hard to know. But we know that right now we are working with eight women. Each one of them has a completely different story. So it could be a 19-year-old girl who got manipulated into a relationship. And before she knew it, she was living with the trafficker, which she wouldn't know was a trafficker yet, to him taking pornographic pictures of her, to him putting them on a site perhaps like Backpage, and then before she knew it, she was being prostituted out. So it could be that. We have stories that we know where boyfriends in high schools are selling their girlfriends to their friends for revenue and favors. That's happening right here in the Chippewa Valley. So it has many different faces to it.
That seems crazy. It's just, I'm probably going to sound like a broken record here because it just doesn't seem to fit with what the Midwest is or with Western Wisconsin. So how important is it for people to kind of realize that, I mean, that this isn't just the big cities or, you know, the Southeast Asia or whatever?
Right. And that's what we really feel our message is. It's going on, so why not just lift the lid and take a look and be a part of the solution to it? So, I mean, it's been going on since the beginning of time, whether it's in big cities or rural areas. I know I've heard Cheryl say before, wherever there is vulnerable people, and Cheryl, maybe you can speak to that. Vulnerable people and
people who have the money that they're willing to pay for what they want, then there's going to be victims.
And vulnerable people, what types of people are vulnerable to this kind of a industry?
A lot of times it's runaways. A lot of times it's children from broken homes who are looking to be loved. If it's a group that's sophisticated enough that they're kidnapping women, then it's just being in the wrong place at the wrong time. It's men and women who are naive to the fact that there are people out there who will do you harm.
This is the West Side. We're talking about sex trafficking in Western Wisconsin. We've got open phone lines. The number is 1-800-228-5615. We're speaking now with Cheryl Voiles, a victim of sex trafficking who is lucky enough to get out alive. We're also talking with Jenny Almquist. She is the founder of the group Fierce Freedom. It's a advocacy group based in the Twin Cities, but also based in
Eau Claire.
Based in Eau Claire. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was the Twin Cities. based right here in Eau Claire in the Chippewa Valley. And we're also going to be speaking with Ryan Dahlgren, a police detective with the Eau Claire Police Department. The number, 800-228-5615. Cheryl, were you ever arrested for prostitution when you were in, when you were being trafficked?
No, I was not. There were raids at times, but I was not at a particular raid at the time. But being a, what often would happen is in this particular area, there was also law enforcement who were part of the corruption. And so, especially the young ones, they would take them away. Or if we tried to run away, they'd bring us back to the stable master. And so I never actually went through the process of being arrested because of how they had it set up.
But if someone were arrested that were you know, being controlled by these people, what happens then? I mean, would there be any spilling of information, or was that probably not likely because of fear?
Probably not likely. If because of fear, as living in the warehouse environment and being in an environment that you are owned by another person, you know that they have life and death over you. So the fear is that you're not going to say anything because they'll kill you. And so when, you know, you're told what to say, you're told what to do. And so usually as teenagers and young women, the women are arrested as prostitutes. And if they're underage, they usually end up in detention centers.
And did you travel a lot, or were you kind of based in a location and you know, as far as servicing Johns or whatever. Did you travel from city to city, or were you pretty much stationary?
We traveled from city to city. We would often go to large cities that had what we now call conventions. We called them business meetings. And it would be set up that the men would purchase services of a child or maybe two children. And in those particular instances, sometimes men would purchase the services of a child for the whole night.
Mm-hmm. And you say child, mostly children.
Yes. We were divided into groups. So the group that I was in the most, we ranged from about 4 to 10.
Did you ever identify with your captors, you know, what is commonly referred to as the Stockholm Syndrome? Is that once it becomes so kind of maybe broken, does that happen?
Yes.
How so? Explain that.
Well, I spent so much time with them that I knew them as individuals. I knew them as people who had things that they cared about. And so, yes, in our brokenness, we have a desire for someone to love us and to be loved. Mm-hmm. And so even at that horrific level, there's still a sense of trying to connect with somebody or something to love and be loved by.
And I think we've already touched on it a bit, but why couldn't you just quit? Just get out, say I'm done,
Because they would have killed me. It took me years of slowly removing myself, moving from place to place, and starting over and keeping my mouth shut until enough time had passed that I felt that not only was I safe, but I could no longer not speak up.
Well, and thank you for sharing your story. I mean, that's got to take some real courage to do that. Do you still worry that there might be people out there trying to, or that would be interested in silencing you or anything like that?
I don't think that fear ever goes away.
And let's talk about the tolls on a person. I imagine there was some physical tolls that from this. But what about the mental side of things? I mean, post-traumatic stress?
Huge impact. One of the difficulties is due to the trauma and the level of trauma, especially the longer you're in it, the more trauma and more brokenness that were often viewed as not reliable witnesses. Mm. And so what we need to understand is as people come out, we have to help them rebuild their whole world, their whole trust, their whole ideology of themselves. And not only that, it takes a long time. It takes a journey to begin to heal.
Physical, emotional? I mean, emotional probably plays into the mental, but was it physical harm that was done as well?
Yes. And I suffer with different issues due to that.
Jenny Almquist, this is slavery, is it not?
It is absolutely slavery. These people are not able to leave. They are forced, coerced, manipulated. We know that some of these girls are, I mean, right down to the fact that they're tattooed and branded with a trafficker's brand. Mm. So, yes, it's absolutely modern-day slavery.
How does this, I mean, how could it happen here? How we have already talked about it. I mean, I imagine there's a demand for it and whatnot, but it just, why is it so hard for me to believe this?
Well, I think because we don't see it. I mean, it isn't, it used to be that, say, prostitution, that we could see people walking the streets. We could see, but really you don't see that anymore. I mean, you can get anything you want from, you know, pornographic downloads from Backpage. You can just get on the computer and find what you want and go after it.
We're talking about sex trafficking right here in western Wisconsin. My guests are Jenny Almquist of Fierce Freedom, Cheryl Voiles. We also have Ryan Dahlgren, a police detective with the Eau Claire Police Department, who will be on in just a moment. If you have a question or a comment, you can give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. The number again is 1-800-228-5615. Who was, and you already touched on this a little bit, Cheryl, but Jenny, if you could get in, who is fueling this as far as Johns? Is it any one type of person or is it anybody? And do you think that they imagine that they're playing into or feeding this awful industry when they try to meet someone?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't know. We do know the big issue that we've really tried to address last year and then going into this year is pornography. And we know that, you know, with research and the way it's been looked into, really, that it really fuels sex trafficking. So we've heard it said by the person who made the movie Nefarious. I'm not sure if you've seen it or not, but it's a documentary, very well done. And his quote is that pornography feeds the insatiable appetite of human trafficking.
Hmm. Cheryl, you'd like to play off of that.
One thing is that I call them consumers of abuse. So the perpetrators, consumers of abuse, they cross all socioeconomic, different ethnicities. They're people from all levels. And the thing is we try and look at it and say it doesn't make any sense to us. But what they do, we can't make sense of it because it's crazy. And the other thing is the people who do these kind of things, they don't see the person that they're abusing as a human being. They see them as an object that's supposed to be there to fulfill their needs. So when we ask them to respond in a humanitarian way, they're not going to, because to them, they can't see past their need and the fact that they're going to take what they want in the way that they want.
Do you think there are people that might see this, you know, kind of from the outside, that might assume that someone they know or someone they have met might be in this situation, might be a victim of sex trafficking, and choose to ignore it because it's maybe too uncomfortable or they don't know what to do? Or Cheryl?
Yes, I think people do. We don't, we're very uncomfortable about talking about sexuality, prostitution, and those kind of things. So many people, will shy away from it because it's supposed to be each individual's perception. They also don't realize the signs of it, and also that there are resources out there that we're trying to reach people. There's also fear. A lot of these men are dangerous. They don't want you talking to the people they're trafficking. So you're also looking at perhaps putting yourself in some danger.
And as far as, the pimps, again, people probably have some kind of, cartoon image of what that person is. But the pimps, are they always nearby? I mean, constantly? Jenny Elmquist.
Well, I'll just throw this out here. We were just made aware of a high school graduate from the Chippewa Valley, I'll just leave it very broad, who was arrested in Minneapolis, and she's 19 years old, and she was trafficking.
Trafficking.
So she wasn't being trafficked herself. She was selling girls for drug money.
At 19?
At 19 years old.
And why is it surprising when we hear stories like the FBI sting, 100 people rescued from this in this state? I'll introduce now Ryan Dahlgren. He's he is our law enforcement personnel on the program. He's an Eau Claire police detective sergeant, actually. And thank you for joining us, Ryan Dahlgren.
Thank you for having me. I was just going to speak to the point of you had asked questions about pimps and those who may be trafficking the girls. What we have found is that they're often in the shadows, so to speak, and even protected by those that they're trafficking. Mm-hmm. In my experience, both practical and what I've researched and been taught, is that the girls who are being, typically girls, who are being trafficked won't want to expose their pimp or whoever's forcing them to do this because for a myriad of reasons, there's abuse issues, financial issues, self-esteem issues. For many different reasons, they don't want to speak freely about them. Mm-hmm. So they're protected, I guess, in a manner of speaking.
And why is it surprising when we hear stories like this sting and the 10 people in Wisconsin? I mean, what about that is shaking? I mean, I imagine it's shaking up some perceptions.
Well, I think part of the surprise comes from the fact that it was either Cheryl or Jenny or both who touched on the fact that you just don't see it as you're walking down the street, so to speak. It takes some research, it takes some digging, but it's there and it's not hard to get to. But it's just not readily apparent on the surface anyway. But you look, I think, Jenny, your quote was, you lift the lid, it's there. And that is certainly true.
And we'll get to lifting the lid right after the break, talking about some of the web pages involved. And I know you, it was part of your job, Ryan, keep tabs on who's traveling to what cities and et cetera, et cetera. We will take a break. We're speaking about sex trafficking in Western Wisconsin. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'm joined by Jenny Elmquist of Fierce Freedom, former sex trafficking victim, Cheryl Voiles, and coming up, we'll hear a Q&A that Westside producer, news intern Chia Vang had with a sex trafficking expert in the Department of Criminal Investigation. Also, we'll have more with Ryan Dahlgren of the Eau Claire Police Department. This is the Westside. The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. That number again, 1-800-228-5615. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you for joining us this hour. We are talking about sex trafficking in Western Wisconsin and the state overall. We started out the hour with a personal story of Cheryl Voiles, a victim who hails from the Chippewa Valley and was a victim of sex trafficking right here in the Midwest. And we've heard a little bit from a staunch advocate working to end sex trafficking and aid victims. That's Jenny Elmquist. We'll speak more with law enforcement, Ryan Dahlgren of the Eau Claire Police Department. But first, Westside producer and news intern Chia Vang recently sat down and did a phone interview with a state law enforcement expert on this subject. And she has this report.
Special Agent Price with the Division of Criminal Investigation commands the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force in Wisconsin. She says the terms prostitution and sex trafficking are interchangeable.
The difference, though, is just the language and sensitivity that we culturally are used to. Child prostitution has a connotation that it's a young person who's made a conscious and a poor choice to enter commercial sex industry. It has a label with a long-lasting stigma associated with it, whereas commercial sexually exploited children or child sex trafficking is really truly what it is, and that is a child who isn't developmentally, legally, or socially able to make a conscious choice to have sex for money or to become involved in the commercial sex industry. Oftentimes, these children are runaways, and what we in law enforcement in particular often fail to ask these children who are running away from home is, what are you running from, and who or what are you running to? And these children are oftentimes homeless, which makes them very vulnerable to victimization, commercial sexual exploitation, and child sex trafficking is a form of child abuse. We needed to start recognizing that, not only in this state but nationally, that child prostitution is not a choice, although it has that kind of a negative connotation, which really just supports the myths and misunderstandings of the issues of commercial sexual exploitation of children.
I guess I just want to touch on this. When you think sex trafficking, I guess the norm of thinking of it is the people who are selling themselves on the street, but I feel that this is no longer the situation. Is it different now because of the Internet?
Absolutely. The Internet is a venue really for the consumer to connect with the seller. And in this case, the seller is a pimp who is selling sex with a child for money. And the Internet is quick. It's easy. Oftentimes, the users and, to some extent, the pimps incorrectly assume that they're anonymous. But nonetheless, that perception of anonymity provides a vehicle for the exchange of these goods, which are our children, who are being exchanged as if they were property online for the purpose of sex.
What is the significance to the I-94 corridor, then, with sex trafficking?
Well, you know, the significance of any interstate corridor and any criminal activity is the ease of transportation. So whether we're talking about child sex trafficking or drug trafficking, for that matter, which incidentally, oftentimes the two are connected, when you have an interstate highway, it allows for our suspects to transport our victims, and it also allows for the consumers of these goods, whether we're talking drug trafficking or child sex trafficking, for that matter, that it allows for ease of transportation. It's much like the Internet. The Internet allows for ease of communication, and the interstate highways allow for ease of transportation to be able to connect with the child victims and their pimps.
And then going along with that, because I know we were talking about websites earlier, I was just doing a little bit of research, and I saw that multiple ads for people in different cities. So how mobile are these victims, and is this only limited to cities or small towns as well?
No, it is not limited to any particular area, and I think that's an important thing for your listeners to know, is that this isn't just a large town phenomena. This is happening in our large cities. It is also happening in our smaller towns, because we need to remember this, that the pimps will take their victims wherever they will get money, and they can get money from Johns in large cities just as easily as they can get money from their customers, or the Johns as we refer to them, in smaller communities, and particularly in the Eau Claire region, where you do have the interstate corridor. That kind of transportation allows for not just child sex trafficking to happen in Eau Claire or the Twin Cities in Minneapolis, but also in the smaller communities.
That was Jennifer Price, a special agent with the Wisconsin Department of Justice, in charge of the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. The task force worked to counter emerging threat of offenders using the Internet and other online technology to sexually exploit children. Chia Vang, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you so much for that, Chia. Now I'd like to go back to our local law enforcement representative who's keeping tabs on prostitution and sex trafficking in the Chippewa Valley. Ryan Dahlgren is a detective sergeant with the Eau Claire Police Department. And Ryan, how has the Internet changed the game here as far as prostitution is concerned? And has it always been, you know, the Internet's been around for a while. Has it always been on there?
Well, I'll have to say that probably the two biggest reasons, and I'm probably echoing what Jennifer Price said, is it's anonymity and convenience. How long? I can only imagine. I couldn't state definitively, but I can say for the past several years, I'll say 4 or 5 or so, it's become more well-known to me and my colleagues that this is taking place over social media sites such as Backpage, Craigslist, et cetera.
And I want to talk about some cases locally. We've had in Eau Claire, which, you know, it's not a large town. I mean, 60,000 people legally defined, but it doesn't really feel like a big city, you know. We have had a few cases. Explain them. First, we've had some stings that were conducted using Backpage, correct?
Correct. We most recently operated, we had two operations, one this year and then one last year as well, placing a Backpage advertisement in the same vein that you would find any other Backpage advertisement, nothing out of the ordinary. And we just continued with our investigations based on the response to those advertisements.
Mm-hmm. And that led to the combined around a dozen people or so being arrested?
Correct.
For pandering.
For pandering. This year it was 11 over the course of approximately an 8-hour day. And last year it was 10 over the course of over the course of 2 days.
Okay. So how does that work? I mean, there's an officer that is posing, I imagine, or how does that work?
We don't depict the actual officer. And I'm mentioning that we found that some of the women who are advertising or being advertised may use artificial or fake pictures as well. Mm-hmm. So, again, that's not an uncommon practice. And it's that the verbiage is pretty much identical to what you would find on that website already that we use in our postings.
And some of these men were from all over. I mean, I saw some had been from the Twin Cities. I mean, a lot, they would travel to come here. Is that kind of typical of what we would see in a community on an interstate highway like this?
Yes, and I know Jennifer Price spoke to that as well, that, you know, we arrested a couple of people one from the Chicago area, I know for sure, and then, as you mentioned, from the Twin Cities. And I've networked and connected with detectives and law enforcement officers in other jurisdictions such as La Crosse, and then also towards the east part of the state in the Fox Valley. And there again, it's the ease of travel with the interstates or major highways, and with that, you get the drug trafficking, unfortunately, as well as the human trafficking.
So how big of an issue is this in our region, is prostitution and sex trafficking?
It's certainly here. And is the advertisements are pretty consistent. Once in a while, you'll see a drop off or you'll see it pick up. You know, it's not, and again, it's not just limited to, although it's happens in Eau Claire, it's not just limited to those from our region. It's, again, traveling from outside of our region, be it the Twin Cities, be it Milwaukee, Wausau, Green Bay. So because we're on an interstate, and then we also have another major highway, 29, mm-hmm. and then 53, again, the ease of travel will bring that to our area.
We had a caller that couldn't stay on the line but had a question. Cynthia from Eau Claire was wondering, are boys being trafficked in this industry as well? And Cheryl, let's go to you on that.
Absolutely. There are. We often think of it as men abusing women, but it is both sides. Now, statistically, there's more men abusers that are abusing women, but there are women who abuse boys, men who abuse boys. You see it both ways, and so it's important to identify the fact that they, too, are victims.
The number for listeners to call in with questions or comments is 1-800-228-5615. We're talking about sex trafficking in western Wisconsin on the west side. 800-228-5615. Can you even imagine that it's here? What are your impressions when you hear things like this? Give us a call, 800-228-5615. Now, statistics. Jenny Almquist, there's just not a whole lot of statistics that I could find out there. Do you have anything that I might have missed when I was looking it up? And why wouldn't there be more statistics? Is it because this is so secretive?
Absolutely. Actually, I'm going to defer this to Cheryl. We were just talking about this before we came on the air, and
okay.
I think she can probably explain it a little better.
Cheryl Voiles.
One of the things is our legislation is just beginning to catch up with the fact that the awareness comes first. We start to begin to talk about it. But then our policies and legislation has to change in order to be able to prosecute it. So what's happening now is a lot of cases are coming through as runaways, as domestic violence, as sexual assault. They're out there, but a lot of counties don't even have a category for the statistics for human trafficking. So they're going to be putting them somewhere else.
Mm.
It's still out there, and it's still, if you read them, it has, you know, the signs of trafficking. But in processing them, it's our state and the legislation is still working to catch up. When I talk to DAs, you know, one of the things is it's difficult to process or prosecute because there aren't the laws out there to help that. Plus, it's also a crime that takes a lot of time to build trust with the victims that they're able to testify. It's just not a crime like you've hit my car and I'm going to say, you know, this is a man that hit my car.
Mm.
It's really hard to get victims to come to the stand and to testify.
Now, I know you're not a district attorney yet, Ryan Dahlgren, but let's speak to that. Building a case, is it as difficult as Cheryl is saying? And also, what happens if someone is suspected that they're a sex trafficking victim? Is there a charge for that you can check off when you're processing them?
Well, as far as the first point of, you know, having the prostitutes or those being trafficked give us information about who's trafficking them and how it's happening, it's difficult because, as I stated earlier, they're often very protective. And I've had occasion at least once where I tried to speak to a girl. She was an adult, but I know she was being trafficked, and her answer was almost rehearsed. And, well, in fact, she just said, I know I don't have to talk to you, and I don't want to talk to you. And I really got the impression that she was doing that not so much to protect herself from any sort of legal process, but to that person who was trafficking her. Mm-hmm. So there are many layers to try to get through in order to help them come out from the shadows, so to speak, and get them away from their pimps and the people who are trafficking them.
And then to that end, if someone is arrested for prostitution, you might suspect that they are involved in being trafficked. That person is a victim, but yet that person is getting arrested. I mean, that's kind of an interesting parallel there. Is there any – could you speak to that?
Well, there's two crimes. There's the crime of prostitution, and then there's also that other crime or the other piece, which is – you know, that pimp trafficking that person.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, unfortunately, it's the the prostitution portion of it is more readily apparent and is something that we can build a case with through probable cause, evidence, interviews, investigations, et cetera. It's kind of right there. Mm-hmm. And we know as law enforcement officers that there is something more sinister behind that arrest. But therein, like I spoke to earlier, it's really hard to get the information from them. And that's where, in my mind anyways, I really see the victimhood, because they're, for whatever reason, they're protecting those that are trafficking them.
So then once they get the charge, then they are released from jail, because I imagine it's not a you're then for years and years. But then after that, I mean, they're on their own. They might go back in to the cycle again.
Yes, and we're talking, you know, adults here, and yes, that has been my experience with it, that, you know, once they are released, and whether it's just overnight for a court appearance or whether it's part of a longer jail stay, that they'll go back to what they know. And in some cases, those that are trafficking them are waiting for them right outside of court or in a parking lot to take them back. Mm. To that life.
Boy, it's going to be frustrating to be in law enforcement and know that something like that is going on.
To that end, Rich, I say that one of our goals is to stop this from happening. So, yes, I agree with you. It is frustrating on our end when we can't help, not most importantly that person, but then also the problem on a more general or broad scale.
Cheryl.
One thing I'd like to say on behalf of those of us who are impacted by sexual violence is that a lot of people look at it and say, why don't you just leave? Why couldn't you just go do something different? Mm-hmm. And one thing, from, the age of before I even went to school, I mean, as a small child, I was taught the sex trade. So at 18, I don't just suddenly turn 18 and I have a set of skills. The only set of skills I had was the sex industry. And people don't understand sometimes why women end up back into it, even though someone may try to bring them out or they get arrested. Oftentimes it's what they know. It's the only way that they have to make the financial needs. And we really have to understand that you have to really, in supporting individuals, you have to teach them other skills and give them other resources, or they're going to do what they know.
We're talking about sex trafficking in Western Wisconsin. We'll take our final break here, and we'll be back with more from our guests, Jenny Almquist, Cheryl Voiles, and Ryan Dahlgren. We've still got time to take caller questions and comments. The number is 1-800-228-5615. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about perceptions and how they might be hurting, the advocacy or just sympathy for victims. This is The West Side. We'll be back in just a bit. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in this Monday morning. We're talking about sex trafficking in Wisconsin and in our region, right here in Western Wisconsin. It's a problem that's out there. It's nefarious, and it's right under our noses. It's hard to see and hard to detect, is what we're hearing from our guests. They include Jenny Almquist. She is the founder of Fierce Freedom, an advocacy group based in Eau Claire. Also, we've got Cheryl Voiles, a victim advocate as well, also a victim herself that lived the life of someone in the sex industry. Also, we've got Eau Claire Police Detective Sergeant Ryan Dahlgren joining us on the program. If you've got any questions or comments, you can give us a call at 800-228-5615. You can also post on our West Side Facebook page. Perceptions. I'll start with Jenny. And, perceptions. You've got the prostitute on the street, and that's all there is to it. I mean, how do perceptions, how are they wrong, and how do they hinder work that you do or work that, that Cheryl does when she tries to tell her story?
Well, I would love to speak to that, actually, because from what we have experienced ourselves as an organization, we know that you say you see a prostitute and you think that they're doing that by choice. And perhaps that could be true, but we have never, in the whole existence of our organization, have never come across somebody who was in prostitution that wasn't actually trafficked.
Hmm. And so the whole adage, or the old adage of, you know, it's the oldest profession known to mankind. Incorrect? I mean, is it a profession? You can even call it that if you're being trafficked.
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's force, it's coercion, it's manipulation, and it's a piece these people just cannot get out of. It isn't like they make a choice to go down to the corner and prostitute themselves, you know, one day.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a friend of our organization's that she'll say, you know, you talk to a little girl and you ask her what she wants to be when she grows up, and she'll never say a prostitute.
What should citizens do? I mean, should they get involved if, I don't know, if you're at a hotel and you suspect something's going on, do you confront people or do you call the law enforcement, Ryan Dahlgren?
Most certainly. And, you know, I think some things to look for are unusual or high traffic. By that, I mean people coming into the building if it's unusual. And I guess hotel staff would be most aware of that sort of change, that sort of dynamic. But yes, most certainly, if you see anything that, again, it seems like maybe somebody's there against their will, you just have a suspicion that just doesn't seem like an ordinary hotel stay for someone, please call us, because if it is something innocent and it is something ordinary, well, then that's fine. But if it's not, we most certainly want to address this, not only for the quality of life for the people who might find themselves in this situation, but the quality of life for people who are visiting that hotel and for our community at large. That's definitely something we want to take care of.
But what if a person is nervous and about being found out? If they say, hey, you know, if they call the law enforcement and say, I think there's something going on, turns out to be nothing, then they get back. I mean, there's got to be a lot of concern about people reporting their names when they call something in, or it'll come back to them.
Certainly. And they can call in anonymously, mm-hmm, as well. If they just want to say, I don't want to leave my name for this reason, but I think this is going on and this is why I think this is going on, we most certainly will address that.
Now, if someone has a child or someone in their family that they suspect might be getting into this, I mean, is it possible to detect that, Cheryl Voiles?
We have had cases where we've had mothers concerned, and there was a young girl who was being trafficked.
So what kind of things would a parent look for, or a cousin or an aunt or whatever?
Well, they always say changes of behavior, but the person that they're spending time with having significant control over what they do and when they do it, and you'll find that the individual doesn't seem to speak for themselves anymore. You know, again, it's prearranged what you're supposed to say and not say, and you're not supposed to talk about certain things.
Mm-hmm. And how do you approach that person that you suspect is the victim? I mean, is there a certain level of sensitivity that needs to be? I mean, do you go hard, you know, hard and accusatory, or what is the approach that someone should take?
Well, from our experience, building relationships has been really important, and it takes a lot of time. It really does. But they have to gain trust in you, because their whole world is mistrust, you know, with force and manipulation, coercion, all of that. So for us, that's a really big piece of it. And once we build those relationships, it's easier for them to make other connections outside of their world.
All right. And other than law enforcement, is there any place for people to call for help if they are in the situation themselves, or if they suspect a friend or family member is?
Yeah, the hotline number, the human trafficking hotline number, they are really great on the other end of that. So if you have any questions at all, they're really approachable. And you can call them at 1-888-3737-888.
All right. And very quickly, we're almost to the top of the hour. Legislation, 2000, there was the human trafficking bill that passed Congress. I mean, 2000. Before that, there wasn't any kind of national legislation. Is there anything else that that Cheryl or Jenny that you would like to see passed as far as for legislatively?
Yeah, we are involved at the state level, actually, with the Department of Justice. We are on a committee that is proposing new legislation this year, this session. One is for the expungement of records of women who have been charged with prostitution that are actually, it's obvious that they've been trafficked. Mm. So Ohio just passed the law, and so I'm hoping that we as Wisconsin can follow in that.
And will that be introduced this fall?
If it doesn't get buried somewhere, yeah. But that's the goal.
And is there a lawmaker that you're working with in particular, or
there's a whole group of them? I have to say that our representatives locally have been fantastic. So I just would pat them all on the back and say thank you because it is a really difficult issue to approach.
All right, and Cheryl Voiles, we've got about 1 minute. What is the overall lesson that people listening at home should take away from this discussion we've had today?
To realize that trafficking is happening and that every day individuals are being beaten or die, and that it's important that we take this issue seriously and begin to build those relationships and take responsibility for our communities.
All right. Thank you so much. That's our time. I'd like to thank my guests, Cheryl Voile and Jenny Almquist. Thank you so much for your stories and your advocacy. Keep up the good work. Also, big thanks to Eau Claire Police Detective Ryan Dahlgren for taking the time, and much thanks to Chia Vang for producing this program and the Q&A with Jennifer Price and running the phones. Very good job. Also, thanks to Hillary Cruzan for promotions and Dean Collenbeck and Tiffany Coggins for keeping some semblance of sanity at the office. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for listening. Have a safe and productive week, and we'll chat again next Monday morning at 10:00.